Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan. I'm here again with Tommy, Andrew, and Nigel. This week, Tommy's got some topics that he'd like to cover, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to take a couple different looks at this. The first thing I want to talk about is the NFL poaching that happens every year. As of right now, there are 6 open positions, head coaching jobs in the NFL. I'm not going to get into coordinators and stuff like that because that's just way too deep for the amount of time we have. But if we look at the Giants, the Eagles, the Titans, the Niners, the Dolphins, and the Browns, who from the college ranks do you see filling any one of these positions? So either Andrew, Logan, Nigel, anybody, is there any one of those jobs that you can just see there's a name that jumps out to you that would be a great fit and possibly someone who could be picked up there?
I think if he hadn't already come out and said he's not going to take it, I think David Shaw at Stanford would be a good one for that 49ers in the Bay Area job. I think he knows the area. I think he's built up a lot of good, strong support amongst the people there. And I think he'd be a guy that you could bring in understanding that it's going to be a rebuild. And I think that's the big thing with that, because that is definitely a long-term rebuild. The 49ers are just in complete disarray. Many sites sit here and talk about how they're the least talented roster in the NFL. And it's, you know, it's not their fault completely. They had a lot of guys on defense retire. They had a lot of guys on offense. You know, Kaepernick has just kind of collapsed. But, if David Shaw hadn't come out and said, I'm not taking that job, then I could definitely see him being a name there.
We talked about it slightly before we started the podcast. The NFL is so heavy at recycling their own coaches. I'm not sure how much they're looking for college coaches right now. Chip Kelly's an interesting hire who's out there, and despite I think what a lot of people would say with him struggling in Philadelphia, it's really tempting because there's a lot of good players. You got Mariota at Tennessee. Obviously, he matches up well with them. And I think with kind of as Andrew brought up with the struggling roster they have at San Francisco, they might be willing to try something where they bring in that new system and see how well it works there. Because I don't know that it was the system that necessarily failed him. Maybe his attitude, his desire to be a GM, but that's nothing new as far as San Francisco goes. God, I don't know who would want to go to Cleveland. That just seems like the worst possible job in the world. And even if you're an NFL coach, I don't know why you would want to go there.
See, that's the thing. I can't agree with that, Logan. I look at Cleveland's roster, and along the lines, I think that they're doing really well along the lines, which I kind of look for me, from a personal standpoint. I look at when I want to look at success. I think they've made some very bad picks, obviously. I think a corner they took in this past draft, or I think it was the last draft, he hasn't panned out really. Joe Hayden has kind of had an off year. Obviously, the Josh Gordon thing has just been a fucking nightmare. They just need to cut ties with him and never even think about bringing him back. The Johnny Manziel thing is obviously dead. He is not about the team. It's not about talent at this point. It's the quarterback should not. He should be seen and not heard, you know, and I just don't see it from him wanting to take the leadership. But I think they have the pieces in place to be a good team. Obviously, they fired their coach. They have a top 2 pick. For them, I don't know if there's a quarterback in this draft that you should take in the top 2 picks. So I think you take the best player available if I'm them, just because I don't think there's any –
Well, we lost Nigel.
Yeah. So, on that note, it doesn't seem like there's necessarily a ton of college guys that maybe are linked to these NFL jobs. The other names for rumors that have kind of gone out, there's rumors that Nick Saban, of course, and Urban Meyer, whether those guys actually leave is probably unlikely, but there's also reports that Kevin Sumlin's looking out there for it. So those are some other jobs that may open up, but I kind of wanted to switch gears and start looking at some of the hires that have happened now. So there's a bunch of guys who have kind of switched over, but let's start looking at some of the big ones. Obviously, the big two jobs that changed are going to be Georgia and South Carolina in the SEC this year. So I'll open it up. I definitely know Andrew has some comments about both of those. What do you guys think about using South Carolina picking up Will Muschamp and then Georgia picking up Kirby Smart from Alabama?
Huh? What's up?
Hey, Nigel, you picked the perfect time to come back, Nigel. Andrew, why don't you start off this with the question and kind of give Nigel a transition?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm ranting. I think Cleveland's not a bad job, though. I have to throw some support for the perennial bad teams.
I mean, you got to remember Cleveland's tourism slogan.
Detroit. Yeah, by the way, guys, I was more trying to focus on college and who's leaving, not whether the NFL job's good or not. Just what positions might be opening up from college.
I have bad teams.
So do we want to restart with my question, or do you want Andrew to jump into it, Logan?
Let's restart.
Restart the question.
Okay.
My opinion, Tommy, towards the – I really don't know the coaching ranks as good as you do in terms of the college level. I mean, do you see any – I mean, and just kind of throwing it back at you, do you see any kind of – I guess, and, you know, this is more of a Chip Kelly-related question. Do you see any guy from, like, a little bit of a different system kind of going to the pros and maybe being interesting to those open positions?
Not until something works. I think the Philadelphia experiment kind of will turn people off from giving other people a second shot, but I definitely want to say that I think Chip Kelly has another shot of being picked up there, but I don't see anything that's, you know, really out of the ordinary being picked up by any of these teams. I think they're all going to be looking at offensive and defensive coordinators from around the league and just filling from there.
My thing is,
one thing that's going to help is you look at how Mike Shula's been able to tailor the offense to Carolina into Cam Newton's strengths. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that killed Chip Kelly is he got too focused and probably a little too stubborn on, I want to do what I did on offense, and didn't really look at, all right, here's the roster I have, here's the basic tenets of my offense, here's how I can really mesh the two together to put together a great offense. I mean, that's what Mike Shula's been able to do down in Carolina with Cam Newton, is he's been able to take Cam's greatest strengths and really build an offense around accentuating those and try to minimize some of his weaknesses.
It's the typical NFL trap of, I'm in the NFL, I have all the talent in the world, I can do whatever I want, instead of, hey, the guys I have may not be perfect for every system.
Well, and this is something that I think people are going to think about too. Harbaugh got fired because he had the tough attitude. He wanted to run the show. And Chip Kelly, I think that was more what he got fired for, because it wasn't like they were out of it every year. They were contending, at least. But it was more the way he ran the locker room, the way he was trying to bring in players and kind of run the same way that he did in college. And this is another thing that I'm sure you can bring up, Andrew. You can't treat pro players who are making probably more money than you are on average like students who need to listen to everything you say and treat you like as a father figure or as a like a upper echelon kind of person, however you would say it.
I agree with you. I think one thing about it, and we're really kind of seeing as complicated as personnel decisions have gotten to be in the league, I think you're really starting to see the death of a coach who has enough ability across the board to be a head coach and a GM. I think you're going to stop really seeing that a lot. And I think that's one of the big things with college coaches is in college, you're the head of the program. You have so much more control over every aspect of the program than you have as an NFL head coach in most situations. Now, obviously, guys like Bill Belichick or Mike Tomlin that have been there for a while and have shown some success, will have much more control. But I just don't think you're going to see a lot of GM head coaches that have a lot of success much anymore.
I know who I would like to see go to the NFL. It's not going to happen this year for sure, but I'm hoping if they get this expansion team in England and maybe an expansion team in, I don't know where they would put
LA.
It.
LA?
It's not going to be an expansion team. We talked about this in the last podcast. They're going to build a stadium in LA. The Chargers, the Raiders, the Rams, and the 49ers are all going to move to Los Angeles and have their own division.
Either that or one of them's going to run to San Antonio to get their own stadium because they don't want to fight the other three.
They can play in the Alamo Dome.
Yeah. So, well, you know, the Rams GM and owner were both spotted in San Antonio walking out of that stadium over the summer.
I know San Antonio has been really, really wrangling trying to get an NFL team, and honestly, I think it'd be a great place for it. But
so let's,
and then the Texas is going to split off and form the TFL.
So
or
let's
we just sell it back to Mexico.
So let's say that they get an expansion team in England and San Antonio for argument's sake. They should hire Toilolo in San Antonio, and God. Who would be perfect for England?
You're in love with his name. I feel
well,
it.
First of all, you're pronouncing it wrong.
It sounds like
in the Tololo. I don't know where you're getting toy from, but
is that
the thing about it? Is in that offense, if you really wanted to, it's got such a depth and a starting point in the old run and shoot, which guys like June Jones ran in the NFL, even hearkening back to, you know, the Don Coryell and some of those older run-and-shoot offenses in their heyday. It's definitely something that if you really wanted to try to adapt it, you might be able to have some success.
It's four steps away from a pistol when they start out. The running back takes one step to either side, and the quarterback takes three steps back, and all of a sudden you're in a pistol. It's completely balanced and open. You can run whatever the hell you want out of it.
The base formation is the same base formation that you see out of the old run-and-shoot.
Well, I think the big
– it's in the gun. Although I think, you're seeing some interesting high schools run that same style offense out of the pistol.
Well, I think the biggest argument you would have against that is you're getting NFL defenses – you're giving them essentially hits on the quarterback for free, and that's a dangerous game you're playing.
Well, but that's if you –
that's not necessarily true.
Side of it.
Yeah. That's if you design the game around it. You can do a whole bunch of design runs and pitches and stuff where the quarterback will never be hit.
Yeah. Or you throw the ball 60 times a game.
I would love to see that out of that system. Anyway, Tommy, I know you've got more questions related to the coaching pool that's actually in college football, which we are a podcast for. So I'll hand it back to you. What do we got on that topic?
Yeah, so I wanted to just kind of go through a quick run-through of all the hires that are out there and just get a quick little response of what you guys think. I'm going to start at the end, kind of the lower tier G5 jobs, and we'll move our way up. And as we go higher, we can spend a little bit more time on the bigger jobs. But the first one we're going to look at is Georgia Southern. So they Willie Fritz left to go to Tulane, and we'll talk about them next. So that wasn't a fire. That's a coach who left. And they picked up the defensive coordinator out of Colorado State, Tyson Summers. So for those who don't know, Tyson Summers was a head coach before. And he's actually been at Georgia Southern before. In 2006, he was their safeties coach. So he's got a little bit of head coach experience, and he has some ties to Southern. But other than that, what do you guys think? Positive, negative, or you're just waiting to see what happens down at Southern?
I think it was a good hire. His ties to Georgia Southern, unfortunately, are terrible because he was there the 1 year that Brian Van Gorder was head coach, and Georgia Southern fans don't really like to talk about that year. I think he's great. He's got a lot of ties to the state of Georgia. He's from Georgia. I believe he played ball at Valdosta State. He's been a high school coach in the state. I think that he's a good hire. He comes home. He's got a lot of deep ties. And at a job like that, I think that's the biggest thing is a coach that can come in, hit the ground running, already has some established relationships, and can keep it rolling. He did, for the record, say that he is intending on bringing in an option-style offensive coordinator, because you know at Georgia Southern, you need to run the option or you will get fired.
True.
Cool. So next one, we look at Tulane, who stole Southern's coach, Willie Fritz, after firing Curtis Johnson, who went 3-9 the past two seasons in a row and 15-34 over the past 4 years. So basically abysmal. But as we said, Fritz came from Southern, and he's pretty much coached at every level in the FBS, all the way up to the FBS. Was 13 years in D2 before getting this the Southern job. And he's coached at JUCO in between as well. So what do we think about Fritz moving from Southern to Tulane?
I didn't get it, I guess. He had some success with Southern. I just didn't get the move. I really didn't. Maybe one of you guys can provide a little bit more insight on why Tulane would have been a more preferable location than Georgia Southern.
I'm not sure if it's more preferable. Fritz is a Texas guy, and Southern's just got a lot of tradition, and it kind of has a really good understanding and idea of what it is, and he may just not have fit what Southern is looking for. I think it's a great hire for Tulane. We say a lot of bad things about Curtis Johnson, but one of the things that he really did with Tulane was he started to ingrain that program back into the neighborhoods in New Orleans and back into the state of Louisiana. He recruited that area extremely heavily. There's tons of talent in Louisiana, and he's kind of started building some of those bridges, and I think that's really going to be the big thing for Fritz, is if he can keep those bridges, recruit the state of Louisiana heavy. They're in a tough side of the American, but I think his offensive styling will fit in perfectly. I think you'll probably see him throw the ball a little bit more than he did at Georgia Southern.
Yeah. Cool. Moving to the next one, we got Louisiana Monroe. Todd Berry is out, and in is Matt Viator from McNeese State. Anybody have any thoughts on them?
I think it's a good hire. McNeese is in Louisiana. That he's had some success at McNeese at the FCS level. I think it's just kind of a local guy who's going to be able to build the ties and hopefully already have some strong recruiting roots in that part of the state, in that part of the country.
Next one. Big surprise to a lot of people, UCF. First surprise was George O'Leary, who decided to resign in the middle of the season after opening 0-8 with losses to FIU and FCS Furman. O'Leary was getting a little bit up there in age anyway, so they knew he was leaving, but maybe not in the middle of the season. And then surprise number two, they pick up the offensive coordinator from Oregon, Scott Frost, who many people thought was going to get the job at Oregon recently.
Actually, this is the one I'm most excited about. Like, I just think, I mean, and obviously he'll kind of match his offense to the current players he has a little bit, you know, because he won't be able to kind of recruit exactly what he needs for his system. But, I mean, Florida is always chock full of talent. The amount of talent down there, even maybe not the 1A type guys, even those second tier guys are going to, in his system, in Oregon system, I'm super excited for him. So this is actually one of the most exciting hires for me this offseason.
Well, I've always thought Frost was a great coach. I'm surprised more people haven't given him the chance to get out there. What I'm really excited about for him, though, is they basically have to give him a couple of years to develop that program, because you can't do much worse than what they've done last year. So I'm hoping he really gets a chance to kind of go in there and define himself as a coach.
All right. Looking next, we have North Texas, who fired their coach mid-season after losing homecoming to Portland State, so in the middle of October. So he was out pretty quick. But they hired Seth Luttrell, who was the offensive coordinator at UNC, who run that up-tempo Larry Fedora offense. So what do we think of Seth Luttrell out in the Dallas area, North Texas?
He spent time at Texas Tech. He's a Texas guy. I think it's a good fit for him. I don't know. Luttrell was a replacement hire on Fedora's staff when Blake Anderson left for Arkansas State. So I'm not sure how much it's going to be Fedora's offense, and it might be more along the lines of some of the air raid stuff you saw at Texas Tech. That's just a tough job. I think, you know, you're in Texas where there's tons of talent, but you've gotten to be so low on the pecking order, especially with Baylor and TCU and these other programs putting together solid seasons. It's going to be a really tough job, but I think it's a job you can maybe put together a couple of wins, you know, maybe win a Conference USA every now and again.
Looking at the next one, I'm not going to open this up for your guys' opinions because I know we could talk for days about this, and we've talked about it offline, is Hawaii. So Norm Chow is out, and they hired Nick Rolovich from Nevada, who actually played quarterback at Hawaii for 2 years in the early 2000s. And he actually coached there and was offensive coordinator in 2010 and 11 before moving to Nevada. I think for the most part, we all agree it's a good hire because at Hawaii, you have to hire somebody who's tied to the island, who believes in the program and the culture of Hawaii. But we'll be interested to see what he does there. Next, we're going to look at East Carolina. So Ruffin McNeil is out with a 43-34 overall record. I'm not sure everybody expected him to be fired, but he's gone now, and Duke's offensive coordinator Scotty Montgomery is in. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Terrible firing. Absolutely terrible firing. The rumor that I've read around is he was trying to go to bat for hire a pool of money for the assistants, trying to get his assistants raises, and they pretty much showed him the door. McNeil was an East Carolina grad, played there, coached there, well-loved by that community. This is going to bite them, and it's going to bite them hard. I didn't think Montgomery was that great of an offensive coordinator at Duke. They especially tanked in the second half of the season this year, as well as showing they weren't able to ever really rebound. And Thomas Cirk wasn't the answer. They lost a lot in Anthony Boone and were never really able to build up a young quarterback to take his spot. I think this is going to set East Carolina back a ton.
Yeah, my thought is actually, how does this affect Duke more than how does it affect East Carolina? Because I think there's a consensus it didn't really make sense from ECU's standpoint. I think Duke might actually get better from losing that offensive coordinator, but I know that's a debate we could sit on.
That's how you really feel.
Next one we'll talk about is Toledo. So Matt Campbell hired out, taken over at Iowa State that we'll talk about coming up. So Toledo just promoted their offensive coordinator, Jason Candle. What do we think?
I mean, they've, you know, it's one of those where they had a winning program. They were winning a lot of games, so you might as well just give the keys to the next guy up.
Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward. Then we look at Bowling Green, who Dino Babers took over at Syracuse, and they hired Mike Jinks from Texas Tech.
I don't really know a lot about Jinks. To be completely honest, I think if he can come in and have that high-tempo offense that's been installed there, there's a good bit of talent. They've got a lot of guys coming back. They do lose Matt Johnson, but a lot of skill players coming back around them, and I think it's a job that has kind of shown us a lot of cradle of coaches type guys, guys like Dave Clawson, guys like Urban Meyer that got their start running this spread at Bowling Green.
Next up, we look at BYU. Bronco Mendenhall left to go to Virginia, and why he did that, I don't think anybody can give a valid reason. But the job is open and closed to Oregon State's defensive coordinator, Kalani Sitake. I hope I said that right. What do we think about the hire there?
first thing is BYU's head coach must be a member in good standing of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So that's going to really limit their pool of applicants. Honestly, the fact that they got Nia Mazzalolo on campus and didn't offer him the job, I think is going to come back to bite them. I understand a little bit of their fear, but the guy has had great success at a place that just has severe recruiting restrictions, and I think would have been a fantastic hire for BYU. Satake doesn't have any head coaching experience. You know, the Oregon State defense really wasn't that great. I think he's just kind of followed Anderson around as to the different places he's been, but you know, I'm surprised that Mendenhall left. I think that's really what caught me off guard the most.
Yeah, I think Mendenhall was doing it to prove himself. What exactly, I'm not sure, but I think he felt being part of a Power Five probably gave him a better chance to stand out. And honestly, if you want to be in a Power Five, the ACC is probably the one you're thinking, oh, yeah, I could probably pick up some wins in there. I am always questioning anything coming out of the Oregon State system. Just no offense to them, I just don't like the Beavers. That said, Satake is a very tasty mushroom.
I did not know that they didn't offer him the job. I thought he decided to stay at Navy. That's interesting.
It's he said, she said. No one really knows what went on in the closed door meetings.
Okay. Yeah, I thought he was just saying Navy was just where his home, you know, where his heart is, and decided to stay. But
yeah, I mean, it'll be nice.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody wants to be the girl left at the prom.
Moving on to our last group of five, we're going to look at Memphis. So Justin Fuente is on his way out to take his offense over to join Bud Foster's defense at Virginia Tech. And so Memphis hires Arizona State's offensive coordinator, Mike Norvell. So Norvell is definitely a Todd Graham guy, likes to run the offense that Todd Graham does, and is going to be bringing that over to Memphis. What do we think about that?
This is interesting. This is very interesting to me. From my standpoint, I guess it's been the last two seasons that Memphis has kind of made noise, and obviously they had a quarterback that they could make noise. It'll be interesting how stuffed the coffers are with Fuentes leaving, how many people he's kind of bringing with him in terms of recruits. Obviously, Arizona State's had success with their offense. Todd Graham is definitely a guy who seems to be able to, you know, install an offense with whoever he puts at quarterback. So it'll be interesting how much carryover there is in terms of that offense. At least it'll be exciting. How effective it will be, we'll see. But it will be exciting.
Next, we'll look at Iowa State. In my opinion, one of the best hires of any team this year. They got Matt Campbell out of Toledo after Paul Rhodes was let go. So what do we think about, anybody else agree or disagree with me on that, Matt Campbell at Iowa State?
I think it's a good hire. I just think Iowa State's a tough place to win.
And then the next one we look at, Virginia fired Mike London. Writing's been on the wall there for a while of him being gone. And then the surprise hire of Bronco Mendenhall. Why he would want to leave BYU and go to a place like Virginia is beyond me. But what do you guys think?
I think the biggest thing about this hire to me is you look as he's filled out his staff. I don't think he's done a very good job of filling his staff with East Coast and Southern guys. That's where Virginia's going to make its living recruiting, is within its own state in the Tidewater, up into Maryland, Pennsylvania, and then down into the Southeast and the teams it plays. And his hires just don't seem to be guys that have a ton of experience recruiting in those areas. I think it's going to really bite them a little bit. You know, he's a great coach, especially fantastic defensive coach, put together some great programs at BYU, but I think that's what's going to bite him, is I think that he hasn't hired really well for the area that he's going to be having to recruit.
Next, we look at Syracuse. Scott Schaefer is out, and Dino Babers is in from Bowling Green. So we talked about that a little bit. Thoughts on Syracuse?
Great hire for them. And they have nothing to lose. I mean, he's a guy who's gotten results where he's been. Is going to have, you know, I don't think there's going to be one kid on offense who will be like, yeah, I'm not excited to play in that offense just because it scores and puts up points. I think he's going to make Syracuse overall a more competitive team. So I think this is a good hire. And whenever you can have, you know, my minority coaches move up the ranks, to me, I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's a great hire. I think it'll bring a lot of excitement to that program. I think it'll help them out. You know, Syracuse is still kind of in that tough spot where they're a tough school to recruit to. But I think with that kind of offense, if he can put up the kind of numbers he's been putting up at Bowling Green, I think that'll definitely help draw kids to want to play up there. Plus, they play in a dome, so.
Yeah. Next, we'll jump to Virginia Tech. So we're looking at Frank Beamer, finally retired, and Justin Fuente is hired, and perhaps the even bigger piece of news is that Bud Foster is going to stay as defensive coordinator there. So what do we think about Virginia Tech and their hire in the future?
I think keeping Foster was an absolute coup. You know, you've got one of the best defensive minds in the game in a place where he already knows how to recruit. The kids have bought in. You don't have to bring in a new coordinator to teach a new system and have the growing pains. The thing about Fuente is he was kind of at Memphis until he got Paxton Lynch. And that's really going to be the thing to me, especially at a place like Virginia Tech that really recently has had some issues recruiting quarterbacks, you know, with Michael Brewer being the best option the past 2 years. I don't really know what they've got in the cupboard or coming in, so that'll really be interesting to see what they're able to do on offense, because they've always been really talented on defense. They just have never really had a strong offense to take advantage of what their defense is able to do.
Next, we'll go out to the West Coast and look at Southern Cal, who just, after the whole Sarkisian incident, just promoted their offensive coordinator, Clay Hilton. Maybe a surprise for a lot of people, nothing special. What do we think about USC's hire?
I'm going to wait for something bad to happen, because it seems like the past few years, something bad always happens to USC, and it just comes out of the blue. So I'm going to wait for something bad to happen. As far as the actual coach, Andrew, take it.
I actually think it's a pretty good hire. You know, it's not a home run, swing for the fences kind of hire that's going to make a lot of big deal and excite a lot of people. But the players love him. You know, they've really bought in. He did enough to win the South, which is fantastic. I think the other thing that we're starting to see is just how special the Pete Carroll years were at USC. Mm-hmm. And how that's not something that comes along very often. You know, I think we're really seeing it with Nick Saban in Alabama. You know, you're seeing that a guy can just come in and just build a juggernaut of a program. Yeah, you know, and I think that's the thing with USC is everyone's going to want to try to get back to that, but you really got to start accepting some of these fantastic things for what they are and how rare they are. But I think Helton's a good hire. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the years go on, but USC is definitely a place that can recruit. He's obviously a guy that knows USC, has recruited USC, has been with USC. So I think that's a good way to kind of keep stability, because you didn't really fire Sarkisian because he was bad. You fired him for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Couple more. I'm just going to skim through these real quick. Sad day for football when Jerry Kill finally had to retire for good. His medical issues caught up. They promoted inside with Tracy Clays, who's been with Jerry Kill for a long time. So that's another next man up. Randy Ensel was finally dismissed, and if you haven't had a chance to see his farewell interview, I highly suggest you go check it out.
They hired the defensive coordinator of Michigan, DJ Durkin, who's going to be taking over. Durkin's worked with a ton of people with head coaching experience, and it's only a matter of time before he got a job offer.
I think this is the one that's really going to surprise people, because you're going to get a young, dynamic coach in a place that's going to have tons of financial support with Kevin Plank and Under Armour. He's done a fantastic job putting together his staff, keeping Mike Loxley, who's known as a dynamite recruiter in that Washington, D.C., Maryland area. He brought in Mike London as a defensive line coach, who for all his failings at Virginia, still was able to just recruit, and sign some great players out of that 757 area in the Tidewater. And if Maryland can start keeping a lot of their top kids home and signing those great kids out of that part of Virginia, I think it's definitely a team that is going to be on the rise in the next couple of years.
Over at Illinois, Tim Beckman fired, and they just promoted their offensive coordinator, Bill Colbert. Another next man up. At Missouri, Gary Pinkel is out, and in comes defensive coordinator Barry Odom. So what do we think about Missouri?
How long before another race riot starts in Missouri? I mean, God, I feel like for me, the excitement there isn't the coach. It's just the internal struggles that school has had. My gosh.
But I think it takes a very special coach to have walked the football team through the landmines that have kind of happened over the past couple of seasons. And you know, that's not to kind of, you know, say that they were really as much landmine. Maybe that's the wrong word to use. But for them to deal with the teammate coming out to the team before his last season, and for them to be supportive, for them to be dealing with kind of the administration's kind of pitfalls on racial issues, I think it takes a very special coach to keep a team focused on not only on winning, but also on things that are bigger than winning, which is, I mean, just being, you know, a human being. And I like the continuality. This guy has been there with Gary Pinkel through everything, and maybe he wouldn't have done everything like Pinkel would have done, but he understands him, and he'll be around, and he'll be able to offer him insight, and I think that'll be a good resource for him to kind of keep that same flavor at Missouri. So I'm actually liking this move.
I think it's a good hire because it's a guy that knows Mizzou. I do think that it's a special situation, because if Missouri had been in the thick of an SEC East race, yeah, or had been having a good season, yeah, as well as if Pinkel hadn't been diagnosed with cancer and knew that he was going to retire, I think that situation would have played out almost completely differently. Yeah. I think that those two factors played a huge role in allowing Pinkel the ability to do what he did without really having to worry about, well, if I do this, I'm never going to get another job in football again. Yeah. And I think that played. But I think Odom's a great hire because I'm a big fan of keeping guys internal, especially when you've got a coach like Pinkel who's been there for a very long time and really built the culture that he's tried to bring. It's always hard when you bring in an outside guy, which is why Fuente at Virginia Tech is going to be interesting. And I think Foster, again, was a great hire because he can still keep in still that culture that they've had.
All right, before we move on, quick answer. Guys, how long before you think Missouri gets back to competing for an East championship? Because that conference, that division's a mess.
I think if you're looking at that, you've got to look at who else is around, because I think Missouri's benefited from a pretty weak number of years in the SEC East. When you look at teams like Tennessee that are definitely trending up, even if it's little by little each year, you've got Florida, which has had a pretty good season with a brand new coach who seems to be knowing the right things. Georgia's always going to have the talent there. We'll talk about their coaching change in a minute, but I don't think it's a question of Missouri. I think it's a question of what happens in the SEC East moving forward.
That's true. Yeah, you have to definitely look at the competition. And I agree pretty much with everything that Tommy's saying. I think I think that side of the division has the most improvement to make, but I see the necessary steps being made for that improvement to actually happen.
So it sounds like a long time, just to sum it up.
Yeah, I agree with Tommy. I mean, they've benefited from what's really been a downside of the conference. Yeah, I think it's the same thing when you saw Arkansas and Mississippi State make it to a couple of SEC title games when LSU and Alabama were kind of down.
All right, Tommy, next up.
Next up, we're going to go to USC of the East Coast, South Carolina. The head ball coach finally is out, and we may get the dream we've always wanted of Steve Spurrier commentating on college football games. In his place, they hired Will Muschamp, recently fired head coach of Florida and Auburn defensive coordinator. What do we think about this hire? I know, Andrew, you had some choice words about this.
You know, I've said this before on the podcast. It just screams panic hire to me. It screams that they didn't get their top two guys, which in my mind were Tom Herman and Kirby Smart, and started to really kind of have a, oh shit, we may be left at the altar. This guy's been a head coach in the SEC. You know, he had a Sugar Bowl 1 year at Florida. He obviously has recruited fantastically on the defensive side of the ball. And in all honesty, the majority of the players playing for Florida this year are Muschamp recruits. You know, and he's shown that ability. The big question is going to be whether or not he can develop any semblance of a good offense in Columbia and being able to recruit. South Carolina was able to recruit with some solid coaches. They lost their recruiting coordinator and Spurrier in a great decision of nepotism, hired his son as a recruiting coordinator, and I think that was when you started to really see the downturn, because South Carolina is going to be a little bit more difficult of a place to recruit to than, say, a Florida or a Tennessee or a Georgia.
Yeah, I think it was a really rush hire, especially considering how many things came up on the market at the end of the season.
I just want to see Will Muschamp's closet after being at three different SEC schools in 3 years.
Next up, guys, I want to focus on this hire, not on the place the guy left. We're going to look at Miami. Al Golden was finally shown the door, and they picked up Mark Richt out of Georgia. What do we think about this hire down in Miami?
I think it's the best hire of the offseason.
Stole the words right out of my mouth.
I think they got a guy that's perfect for them. He's been down there. He's got experience in the state of Florida. He played for him. He was the OC at Florida State for a long time. I think that he's shown that he can win games. He's shown that he can make a lot of good decisions. He can bring in some great players. I think putting him smack down there in that area is going to help them recruit. I think he's going to be able to walk in with some respect and with some ability, and definitely – I mean, it just feels to me he's the most proven commodity that was on the market this year, and I don't see him having much of a downturn, which, you know, unfortunately means he's still going to find a way to, you know, extend his 12-2 record against the Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, that was my first thought is when they made this hire, is like, crap, we got to play this guy every year still.
He hates us like Steve Spurrier hates everyone.
Which, by the way, I want to say this because I didn't get the chance. If Spurrier doesn't wear the visor when he's commentating, I will be pissed off. Back on Richt, I actually had a conversation with a couple of people down here about that. The only downside I would say is that every program he runs it like a yacht club where the players are just kind of able to do whatever they want. And he cycles them out. But at Miami, that's not a bad thing. I think they actually kind of thrive off that environment. He's going to bring in some excitement to that program. I don't know that he's going to be competing for even necessarily an ACC championship in the near future. But Miami's only going to go up from this hire.
I think, you know, Miami pretty much is a yacht club already, let's be honest. Not just their football program. The entire school's a yacht club.
That's true.
Should have hired Uncle Luther.
All I can say is if he averages 9.5 wins for the next 15 years in Miami, he's getting a statue.
They'll be happy with that for 3 or 4 years, but because of the tradition at Miami and the history, they'll get restless.
Oh, okay. I mean, they can get restless if they want, but I'm just saying, look where you've been the past
But the thing about Miami is they keep looking back and they see those teams in the 80s and the 90s that were absolutely dominant and go, well, hell, why can't we do that again?
That's because people figured out your secret was your player, so they came to your backyard and robbed you.
I mean, that's really the big thing, is that everyone in the country recruits that part of Florida now.
All right. Tommy, I'm going to go ahead and take over for you. We're running a bit long, but I'd like to just go ahead and sum up one last coach that I think we'd all like to talk about. Kirby Smart, Georgia. Andrew, what are your thoughts on this hire? Because we've actually talked about this a lot, you and I. He's not a proven head coach.
No, but he's the guy that they've wanted for, I mean, the better part of 4 or 5 years. They've looked over and seen what he's done with the defense in Tuscaloosa. They've seen his ability to recruit. You know, he seems to be putting together a fairly solid staff with some strong recruiters. I think he made it a fantastic hire in Jim Chaney from Pittsburgh of his offensive coordinator. I think he's going to allow him to run, you know, the same pro-style offense that Georgia's really liked to run and recruited to and has the talent to be successful with. The questions will be, you know, it's his first head coach. Do we see him like Mark Richt, who came in and was fairly successful, or is he another Will Muschamp type guy who just kind of flames out and really isn't ready for all the head coaching? What George is really banking on is that he can walk in and replicate the system and the process, I believe, as Nick Saban calls it at Alabama. Which, to me, I honestly see him being able to do that. Georgia, I don't see much of a difference between Georgia and Alabama in terms of the amount of money they can spend, the recruiting they can do. You know, Alabama's got more tradition, obviously, but, you know, Georgia sits in the fourth best state in the country in terms of just talent coming out year in and year out. Florida is right next door, and he's hired some great guys. He hired James Coley, former offensive coordinator at Miami, who has some deep ties to that part of the country recruiting. And it hurts, but I think Smart's going to come in and be really successful. The question is, what happens if he comes in and does exactly the same thing as Mark Richt does, wins 10 games a year for 4 or 5 years, and you're right back exactly where you were?
Well, I think actually for Smart, this first year, he might not even have that much pressure. I think Georgia fans are not the brightest bunch, but I think they can realize a transition year when they see it. His biggest thing is, can he win against the rivals? You got to beat Auburn. You got to beat Georgia Tech. And you got to beat Florida. And Florida is really where they've been struggling these past few years. I'm not sure he's going to have a lot of success there, though, because Florida's just going to get better. Nigel, do you have any thoughts?
I mean, you guys have kind of said, you know, pretty much everything that, you know, my thought process. It'll be interesting to see. I'm going to kind of hold my tongue here for the first year or so, but, I mean, I wish him luck. I honestly, whenever any coach gets hired, I want them to be successful. I know that's not going to really happen because some of these same coaches are hired in the same divisions in the same conference, and obviously everybody can't be as successful as everyone else. But, I mean, Andrew's kind of touched on points that I've thought about, and, you know, Logan, you've definitely touched on some points I've thought about. It'll be interesting. He's able to retain a lot of the recruits that Mark Richt brought in because they're like us. They're interested to see kind of how he puts that Alabama stamp on it. So I think, even though, Logan, I agree with you, he won't have as much pressure. If he isn't successful, that will definitely hurt him going forward because people are like, well, I thought you were going to put the process in place. I thought we were going to be locked in like Alabama.
And that's kind of what I was touching on. Is my biggest thing is if he comes in and does the exact same thing as Mark Richt, how long are they going to give him? You know, they gave Rick 15 years. You know, how long is he going to get before Georgia again is going to be sitting here and going, you know, Georgia went 10-3 this year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how can you sit here? Yeah, they lost to Florida, Tennessee, and Alabama. But I'm sorry, I don't see how any program in the country can sit here and say that 10-3 is a bad season.
Yeah.
Or in my mind, you know, I mean, and the thing is, we've seen all over the place programs fire successful coaches because they didn't think they were good enough. You saw it with Frank Solich in Nebraska, which just devastated that program. You saw it with Philip Fulmer at Tennessee. I mean, they still hate Derek Dooley. You know, yeah. You've seen it a lot of these places where these coaches have
Nebraska
won.
Nebraska did it twice, by the way.
What?
Nebraska did it twice, by the way. Because yeah, they fired Bo Pelini, too.
Fired Pelini, for that matter. And that's the thing is, you've really got to, you know, I understand expectations. And like I've said multiple times, the biggest thing that hurt Mark Richt is guys like Urban Meyer and Gene Chizik coming into the conference and winning national titles and Georgia fans going, well, hell, if he can do it, why can't I do it? And I think if Dabo Swinney wins it this year at Clemson, that's just going to drive another nail down into that of Georgia fans looking around and saying, well, everyone else is doing it, we should be able to do it too, which you've got to be really, really careful with that kind of mentality.
Well, see, I'm not even sure it's a national title talk. I think they would be happy if they could get into the SEC East. But again, you got to win against the rivals your first couple of years or you're going to be on the hot seat immediately. And then you got
to
start.
The thing about it with Georgia coaches is Georgia coaches don't get in trouble until they start losing to Tech. Jim Donnan was terrible against Florida and no one cared. Mark Richt was awful against Florida to start his career and it didn't matter. It's losing to Georgia Tech is what really hurts Georgia coaches.
Well, for Richt, I think it was more not competing for the SEC East. Because when you're losing out to teams like Missouri, even though you're getting the top recruiting class, that's what your fans are getting upset about. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing, letting go of Richt like that. Maybe Kirby Smart turns it around.